Hey everyone, it's Small Timber.
Small Vember.
And we watched No Deposit.
What movie is this?
It's so small, it might not even exist.
Did I get the name of the movie right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think so. Check the DVD. And yes.
Everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Woo-wee, it's Small Vember, and I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin, being real small for Small Vember.
So do you live in like a little shoebox?
I live in a little matchbox.
Oh, wow, you're even smaller than I thought, Small
Very
Vember.
Very tiny, I'll hop in your pocket. You won't know I'm there.
Oh, so you can jump creepy. Like a flea or something?
Yeah, I have super bug jumping.
Are you spying on me while I'm changing?
A little bit. Okay. I crawl up your chest hair in the middle of the night when like you're sleeping.
I think I saw a Up All Night movie where a guy was crawling around in somebody's pubes like that, but they were like, he was super tiny, so it was like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Like, he was like,
or the Incredible Shrieking Man.
Yeah, I think that's what the movie was.
No, it's like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
exactly,
the pubes
like
scene
it.
And Honey, when Rick Moranis accidentally drops the kids in his pants.
Yeah, and they have to traverse his jungle of a bush. Mm-hmm. I can only assume.
Just as in
off crabs
just but, like in the
we're like actual like
yeah, actual crabs
okay, yeah
like in the Rudyard Kipling classic The Jungle Bush in which Mowgli goes through some changes
he gets real small and climbs around in a bush
exactly
yeah a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush
yeah
I've been told
by who
I don't know
so what do we do here on the
counselor your parole officer
society?
Who told you that
I don't know
I'll
I don't think
what,
I've actually been told that.
You see two birds in the bush, you drop that bird in your hand and you go for him because two is more than one. While he's doing that, I'm going to pick up the bird that he dropped.
Mm-hmm.
More bird for me.
Okay, but are you just going to pick up one or is there a second bird for you to grab?
It depends on how many he catches.
Okay.
What kind of bird is this?
Yeah,
why do I want it so
bait?
Much?
Because well, you can eat it.
Yeah, but...
Or companionship.
Like a pigeon, like a wormy pigeon. Gross.
Well, one, pigeons Wait. Are a delicacy all over the world. Two, yeah. Why is it wormy? Is it dead already? In that case, don't bother with it. Not the challenge you think it is.
Yeah. Stop waving it around in your hand.
Put it down. That's disgusting. Where did you even get that? For those who can't see, because you're listening to this, Dan is holding the wormy corpse of a pigeon, mm-hmm. and he's just waving it around.
Yeah.
His name's Edgar, and he's my friend.
Oh, don't pretend it's a back scratcher. Don't stop doing prop work with it. Now it's a phone. Oh, I get it. Yeah. Now it's a mirror. Now it's a microphone you're singing old doo-wop tunes into.
Now you're telling it to talk to the hand, I guess.
This is from the new show, Whose Corpse Is It Anyway? You gotta do improv with dead things.
That's like that old horror movie, what, children shouldn't do improv with dead things?
That's right.
So what's Small Vember, Dan? Well, we'll explain what this podcast is and then explain what Small Vember is.
Well, Small Timber, as I meant to name it before my tongue slipped.
Unfortunately, it's a real chomping at the bit situation where... Pedants will tell you, also pronounced pedants correctly, is they will tell you it's...
Pedants will tell you it's pronounced pedants.
They will tell you it's champing at the bit, or you've got another think coming.
Mm-hmm.
But real people say chomping at the bit, and you've got another thing coming, because they make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
They're better. So much as
they
the pedants in the,
sense,
in the ivory... you've got another think coming. No one talks about having
Who's
a think.
Say that?
You have a thought. You could say you have another thought coming, but... Maybe,
yeah, but what thing do you have coming?
A comeuppance?
Yeah,
another
yeah.
idea? That's
Seems
the wonderful
pretty vague.
The wonderful thing about thingers, Dan, is that thingers are wonderful things. A thing can be anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the word thing means.
Mm-hmm.
It means anything or a hand that just crawls around on its own or a big rock man who smokes cigars before Marvel decided its heroes didn't smoke cigars anymore.
And, you know... Deep down, even though he looks like a rock monster man, he's got a really...
Rock monster!
Man,
down,
he's got like
down.
A really, he's got a really like good soul, you know?
Oh, sure,
he's
yeah.
Like he's a good guy.
He's still Benjamin J. Grimm, his mm-hmm. Aunt Petunia's favorite mm-hmm. nephew, the ever-loving blue-eyed thing, yeah. or as my son calls him, the anything or the something. He hasn't quite wrapped his mind around the idea that the guy's just called the thing. Mm-hmm. But Dan, you and your ivory tower, Ivy League world, maybe say small timber.
All right.
But us on the streets, mm-hmm. the everyday folk living their yeah. lives and just trying their best to get by.
You say...
We say small vember.
Nuclear.
We say nuclear. We say library.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. You say foliage.
You say washroom.
I say washroom. Yeah, I say turlet. And I say small vember.
Okay.
A turlet is half turtle, half toilet.
It's a living.
As seen in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtlets.
Yeah.
So small vember is, what is it? What do we do on this podcast with small vember?
So normally we like to punch up. We like to make fun of big movies, or at least movies that got a wide release in theaters.
Movies where the people who made them go and live in fancy houses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But in small vember, we, we throw away our morals and decide to take on smaller movies, real passion projects.
Yeah, yeah. And they're usually the best. And boy, howdy.
Oh, gee willikers.
Guys, now this is an example of why we do this podcast.
Well, why don't you tell the story of how we came across this movie?
Okay. So,
which is called No Deposit.
I'm going to check on that right now.
We're watching. Yep. A lot of Foley work there with the chair.
Very loud sound of Dan. I mean, I also can just look it up online.
Oh, wow. Keeps going.
That's Dan dropping the DVD box.
Oh, Dan's picking up a slide whistle.
Uh-oh.
And he puts it back down.
Don't open that closet. Clang, clang, clump, clump, clang, clang.
Back, guys.
Woo! He's riding an elephant back.
I confirmed that it's called No Deposit.
Thanks for that radio audio theater fact-checking session. Yeah. So, Stuart, tell us the origin of No Deposit.
Okay, now, I have been accused in the past of having a suspect memory. And I think this story is going to be probably the same as all the other ones. So please write in and tell me that I was wrong. But back in July, after one of our live shows, some fellows from Canada came up and talked
to me.
Rick
Moranis and Dave Thomas.
I can only assume. And they...
in disguise?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were not wearing their trademark toques, drinking their Elsinore beer.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And they were, these two guys came up and had some very nice things to say about the show. They said they were involved in the film industry. And they also stuffed a DVD
in your pants.
In my pants. And I'm like, hey guys, hands off the merchandise. Mm-hmm. And then I rolled some dice on the floor. and then so they and it they explained
the real goon show turn that story.
Yeah, so they explain the that this movie is this like passion project, not unlike one of your Fateful Findings, one mm-hmm. of your The Rooms, and they explained some other stuff that I kind of just tuned out because I was riding high having just done a show with my favorite guys.
Well, aww. Let's explain a little bit about it now. This is a Frank D'Angelo film.
Now, Frank D'Angelo may be familiar to our Canadian listeners mm-hmm. as an entrepreneur. He owns a company that has an energy drink. Mm-hmm. And for a while he owns
Surge, I believe.
Surge?
I think it's Surge.
Okay, that's a big one.
But it's Canadian, so it's spelled S-E-R-G-E, and it's a French-Canadian energy drink. But I don't know that it is Surge, but he's a successful drink manufacturer. He had a brewery for a while, which failed. He mm-hmm. has a band that's named after his brewery, which he sings in. And he's
What's
also
the name of the band?
Steelback Brewery, or the Steelback 2-4, awesome. Or something like that. And I think it's Steelback. And he also, I mean, we don't have to get into this, but it was like, we were watching the movie, and I'm like, this is crazy. The guy's starring in the movie, and he directs it and writes it, and he's terrible, and he's just some businessman. And then I'm looking him up on Wikipedia, and there's the part about his sexual assault charge that he had to face in court, and I'm like, this is less fun all of a sudden.
Yeah. Although it does explain why every woman in the film is a harpy, probably.
Oh, yeah, that's true, except his loving girlfriend or wife. No wife. And he also hosts a talk show that he pays to air in Canada.
Uh-huh. What's the name of the talk show?
The Being Frank Show. And so he's a guy who like has money and decided he wants to make movies, and he's made a couple now. And his trademark is that he hires real relatively big name actors to be in them.
Now, before you get into
the big
name actors,
Hollywood directors' trademark is hiring
big name actors. Yeah. But not you. Usually, your passion project guys who are totally outside the film industry, your Neil Breens, if you will,
they don't have the wherewithal to.
But this guy's not as crazy as Neil Breen. Like if Neil Breen was on meds, was taking his meds. And had an accurate view of reality, except that he still thought he was a great artist and the greatest guy in human history. That's Frank D'Angelo.
Okay.
I want to note, before we get into the big
You want to note what love is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to note what love is. That the movie is totally scored by Frank D'Angelo songs, and that the the Blu-ray that we were given has a copy of Frank D'Angelo's album titled Look Into the Stars. And it's accompanied by a photo of Frank D'Angelo that looks to have been taken about 20 years earlier than when this movie was made.
Now, Frank D'Angelo is a true auteur. He wrote the movie. He directed it. He stars in it. He cast it. He gave himself a story by credit, which seems redundant when he wrote the screenplay, too.
And just to point out, the soundtrack that is recorded by Frank D'Angelo, or I like to call him Frank Steely D'Angelo,
because he
provides some poppy, upbeat, jazzy little renditions of songs like Hallelujah, which is always great in a movie. Mm-hmm.
And Live and Let Die was credited at the end, but I don't remember hearing it.
Yeah, he must have disguised it really well in one of the earlier scenes.
But what I've always wanted is a jazzy, poppy, up-tempo version of Hallelujah, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, Kelsey Grammer's not available to sing this. I guess Frank D'Angelo is our next best bet.
So, but there were no stars in the heavens, or rather Toronto, the Toronto skies, because even though it's set in Brooklyn, it's very clearly not, aside from the huge swaths of stock footage of the Manhattan skyline that appears in the film. But there are all these stars. There's Paul Sorvino. There's Eric Roberts. There's Doris Roberts. And I have to assume what was one of her last roles.
Who's there?
Passed.
Is that a Baldwin I see?
We'll get to him. There's Robert Loggia playing a Holocaust survivor. Michael Madsen. There's Margot Kidder. Daniel Baldwin playing the most anti-Semitic character I've seen in a film since Triumph of the Will.
Yeah.
There's Peter Coyote. There's all the, like...
There's a real coyote?
No, there isn't.
Coyote from the Roadrunner cartoons?
And I wanted to say that Dominique Swain is in it, but in the end credits, she's listed as Domique Swain. So that's either a typo or it's just someone who looks like Dominique Swain and has a very similar name.
That must have been really awkward at the flashy red carpet premiere where Dominique Swain showed up and they're like, I'm sorry, ma'am, you're not on the list.
Are you Domique Swain? No, I'm Dominique Swain. Well, you're not in this film. But it's the story of two men, one who who through hard times falls on the wrong side of the tracks and takes the wrong road, and one who is the greatest billionaire saint who ever lived.
Although
Frank D'Angelo.
We assumed at the beginning of the movie that it was a mobster, just entirely based on the way he talked.
And looks.
And
he also
dresses.
He sleeps wearing a platinum watch and platinum bracelets and a huge pinky ring.
And gold chain.
And gold chains. And like where I'm from, New Jersey, a big pinky ring means you're either in the mob or you want people to think you're in the mob.
Yeah. So or you're Ringo Starr visiting.
So the movie.
I mean, he doesn't show up in New Jersey that often.
New Jersey.
I really wanted to have some of this pizza I heard so much about. What else do you do in New Jersey? Pretty much it. You want to go to a diner? Sure. You got a lot of them here on your turnpike.
You got to pay your dues if you want to play the blues. And where else do you pay your dues than in New Jersey?
Yes, I decided to take the family down to Wildwood. Really? Okay. I mean, seems like you can afford to go somewhere much, much greater than that. Going to take a swing by Sandy Hook. That's Sandy Hook, but he's English. So he's
I didn't
Sandy
get to be a Beatle by throwing my money around.
Maybe some guys can live like there's no tomorrow, John Lennon, but I can't. That was really tasteless of you, Ringo. That was a friend of yours killed way before his time. Well, if you got to laugh about it, huh? I'm the one who's living off of his royalties. Ringo, this is a side of you I never wanted to see. This is a dark star indeed.
Yeah. Love you, Ringo Starr. You're a treasure.
So I decided to go down to Hoboken and see Frank Sinatra's birthhouse. Other words that start with H, so I don't have to pronounce it.
Now, this movie begins with information about the housing crisis recited by a Barack Obama soundalike.
That's up to debate. This is a controversy that's been raging since the film started.
Because the soundalike was so terrible.
And we're given no in-film evidence that except that he refers to himself as a leader and says he won't let it happen again. The fact is that also, like, Barack Obama is a real president who made real speeches. I don't remember him ever making that speech. I don't, like...
No.
It's not... I don't... So it's... And Barack Obama doesn't show up as a character in the film.
So are you saying that filmmakers never take historical liberties with things that world leaders say?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Stuart.
Okay, just writing this down in my Elliot journal.
That's
rules
exactly
that Elliot
what I'm saying.
Lives by.
But okay, so we're given probably, what, six straight minutes?
Yeah,
of like, stock footage of New York and just... economic calamity.
Yeah, graphs going down.
Homeless people, yeah, animated graphs going down.
Foreclosed signs being slapped on buildings. Mm-hmm.
While we hear this, like, speech by possibly Barack Faux Obama.
Good one.
People in barrels selling apples.
Mm-hmm.
Blind man with a cup full of pencils on a street corner. Yeah, yeah, of course. Stockbroker throws himself out a window and lands on a couple doing the Charleston. And they're stuffing themselves in a phone booth.
Flagpole sitting.
Yeah, sitting at the flag bowl.
Now,
is that a bowl of flags?
I was hoping you wouldn't notice.
Or is that like the Super Bowl, one. But it's flag ball?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Because
like the Orange Bowl is a football game where they play with oranges and some balls.
Footballs. Yeah. Very messy.
Yeah.
They got to stop the plays all the time because the balls have been squeezed too hard and just exploded.
Yeah, yeah.
So the movie starts with this guy, D'Angelo.
We're set up to feel like this is going to be a real indictment of the housing crisis.
Yeah.
This is about people who really are having trouble. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of big ideas in his mind. He's tying it into real-world current events.
I was expecting, Steve Carell with a wacky haircut to show up and start shouting at bankers.
Yeah. Christian Bale to just be listening to Metallica while he drums on his desk.
Yeah.
Now, this takes place after the housing crisis, as shown by the opening. And yet, later we see Dominique Swain smoking in a bar, which has been illegal in New York since well before 2008. Stuart, you're a barkeep. How do you explain this? You're a tavern owner.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you can tell that the bartender, and I'm hoping bar owner Paul Sorvino in this movie.
That would be really sad if he didn't.
Yeah, that he's like...
If Paul Sorvino was just a bar back.
Yeah, yeah. This is he just works the day shift because he's not ready for the prime time. Well, the thing is that, as you can see, his only customers are these people. So he's like, I gotta cater to my regulars.
Gotta bend the rules. Mm-hmm. So we're introduced into the world of... Eric Roberts, who's a banker,
mm-hmm.
who is telling...
Who's at work at 5:50 in the morning.
It doesn't... He's talking to Michael Paré from Streets of Fire.
Yeah.
Who is your average everyman who has the hair of a man in his 30s, even though the rest of him is
wearing a
30-year-old's
wig.
Yeah.
Michael Paré's
like,
character is this...
Acid-washed jeans, too.
He's this put-upon everyman who dresses like he's our age, or a little younger, and we're all in our mid to late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And... has a wife and a very young child who's maybe about 2 years old, who is an enormous enormous baby.
This is the biggest goddamn baby I've ever seen. And he's wearing these fucking blue jeans where I'm like, I saw the tag on those things. I'm like, those are bigger than my blue jeans.
These blue jeans have a 40 waist. But he's a... But so this, we're supposed to believe he's a man down on his luck with a young family, even though he's clearly, his children should be in college by this point. But,
yeah, I mean, that's why it's such a big baby.
But the child's actually 17. But so he is being told by Eric Roberts, and we know it's early in the morning because Eric Roberts interrupts this appointment to call another client, and wakes the client up because it's 5:55 a.m. So maybe this is one of those banks that's open early for people who have to go to work. I don't understand. You know, like certain doctor's offices are like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, I can almost understand him, like, calling someone that early in the morning if it's really important, maybe. But I can't understand him interrupting another, like, meeting with a bank person
like
who has come in.
Making the appointment that early.
Yeah, because you look at Eric Roberts and you see a guy who's clearly, like, a consummate professional.
Loves
never
to
does anything erratically. Certainly doesn't comb his hair like a crazy person.
And loves to be up bright and early in the morning, I'm sure. But
we have to assume he did not go to bed.
So he calls our Frank D'Angelo, the mm-hmm. writer-director star who's in bed, and tells him, you have to come.
Yeah, he's dripping with jewels and gems.
You have to come down to...
With Jules and Jim. The classic of the French New Wave.
Posters, DVD copies, the original screenplay, stills from the lobby cards. He tells him, oh, there's your company is getting an $8 million payment. That's a lot of money. There's these new rules. You have to come down and sign for it yourself. But you have 6 to 7 days to do it. That's why I'm calling you so early in the morning. He then hangs up and then turns to his client and says, you haven't met your payments. We're taking your house away.
He's like, I just wanted to do that call in the middle to really rub it in that other people have more money than
just
you.
To show
you.
What a power
this
move.
Guy's so much got so much money, he'll just stop by in a week maybe to pick
the
up $8 million.
What's great is he calls this Frank D'Angelo's character, Jimmy Valenti. He calls him
Jack Valenti.
He doesn't answer right away. Like, he and his wife argue about how tired they are, and it's too early. They're not going to pick up the phone.
They argue for a while.
And then Eric Roberts is like, you know what? I'm just going to give him another shot. And
he calls him a second time,
and it finally gets him on the phone. And there we see our director. The first shot of him is lying in bed with the camera pointed directly up his nostrils.
And also, the first two scenes with this character, he talks to Eric Roberts on the phone. Then he calls an employee of his to tell him he has to go down and sign this thing. Our director does not open his eyes, I think, once the entire time. Mm-hmm. He is sleeping through the starring role in his own film.
Yeah, I mean, he's so into it. That's what's so – like, he's so, like, kind of locked in and keyed in.
Yeah, and I guess it also shows us that he doesn't sweat the small stuff. He isn't going to let this ruin his sleep because here's the thing. He dresses like a gangster. He wears these big pinky rings, black leather jacket over black t-shirt with black pants. His wife tells him, oh, I bought you a nice suit. He goes, that's not what I wear, ba-da-ba-da-ba. And he's driving around. Everything about him screams mobster. And I thought, okay, this is going to be a movie about a mobster who's breaking the law and succeeding, and an ordinary Joe who's trying to play by the rules and is failing to show that the system is rigged. Au contraire. It turns out that he is not a mobster. He is a successful businessman who's also the greatest man in the world. But we'll get to that.
Yes, he's a man who only eats one big meal a day, he says.
And he likes – and it's made very clear when he meets with his executives in what is certainly not the only free room in an office space.
Oh, my God. It's clearly like – I mean, like, it might be his office space because it's all – I mean, like, if it's not
– his products are all over the walls.
His products are all over the walls. It's all energy drinks on the walls.
But those could be his character's products. A lot of this movie also, we should mention, was shot clearly in a hotel lobby, hotel restaurant, and hotel banquet room and hotel. It's like it's very poorly disguised.
Are you talking about how the New York Police Department seems to share an office with like a marketing company or something?
And interrogates people at what is clearly the breakfast buffet area of the hotel. That the bank and also his wife's tea room that she goes to visit appear to be the same banquet hall in the hotel. Everywhere looks like lobbies.
I mean, his boardroom where this, you know, like very wealthy guy doesn't worry about money. The boardroom for his company, which is a very large building with a name that is, I mean, it's so high tech that they literally have the name like drawn on in Photoshop,
they
basically.
CGI the name in.
Yeah. Right. His boardroom has like a cork board in it.
with printouts that say like Salesforce winner 2014 just up on it. It's a real mix of what we're supposed to be taking from the film and what we're actually taking from the film. But anyway, so while Frank D'Angelo is riding high, except he's got to go through the trouble of the signing for this payment of $8 million. Mm-hmm. This other guy, what was his name? Nicky?
Mickey Ryan.
Mickey Ryan, ordinary Joe. He can't find work. He can't afford his house. His wife hates him. She screams at him to get to the baby. The baby loves him because he's great.
She's like many women in this movie, has a nightstand covered in empty booze bottles.
Every woman except Frank D'Angelo's wife in this is an alcoholic, shrill harpy. Mm-hmm. Except for Frank D'Angelo's wife and the best-selling author/expert on hostage situations who appears on the news later.
Who can't seem to stop grinning while reporting on a hostage situation.
But we'll get to that. Dan, you had something you wanted to say. Is it about how Mickey can't even afford a hot dog with soda? He has to just get the hot dog?
No.
Because he can't afford to pay the extra dollar for a drink?
$4, dude, for a hot dog and a drink? That's fucking crazy.
And he says, how much for the hot dog? $3. $3 for a street hot dog? That should be a $2 dog.
Only in Toronto pretending to be New York.
Now, let me just say one thing. I recently paid $10 for a hot dog. It was at an airport. There's always a markup. I was like, you know what? I'm used to paying. You pay $15.
Why are you eating a hot dog in an airport?
Here's why. Because I got a hamburger. Stunt. My son wanted a hot dog. This hot dog arrived. It was easily 15 inches long, and it was delicious. And so I'll tell you this.
If so you're like, sir, I'd like to return this hamburger and pay the additional $3 to get the hot dog option.
Because now you're going to refund me for the unused portion of this hamburger, correct?
And I want you to apply that credit to the hot dog. I'll pay the rest. It would be like a buck. So here's my tip for those who are interested.
Mm-hmm.
If you're ever in the Phoenix airport, just go ahead and get a hot dog.
Okay. All right. What was the purveyor of this hot meat?
Don't remember.
It's hot beef and
chicken. Oh, wow.
Don't remember. It was just such sweet ambrosia, I couldn't hold it in my memory.
Yeah, yeah, it's clouded the memories.
So anyway, that was Elliot Kalin's hot dog adventure story.
The hot dog diaries.
Yeah. I wrote that in an email, sent it to David Hot Dog Coveney. And he reads it while walking a hot dog on a leash.
Yeah, yeah, because his character in that show is David Red Shoe Coveney.
So
you don't know that it isn't.
So, Dan, you wanted to say something about Mickey, our downtrodden hero.
No, all I wanted to say was, like,
he's got a great head of hair.
Oh, yeah. His wife has no sympathy for him in this eviction process. Like,
she blames him. He's a loser. Him.
Yeah. But, well, this is just, like, this is what I wanted to say. Everybody in Mickey's life appears to blame him for his misfortune.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know whether he deserves that. There's no backstory.
And
but
we know that at least at one point he was financially supporting his brother and his brother's
which
wife.
We find out later. Yeah. At first we see him as just like a loser.
His father, his brother, who seems to be allergic to shirts.
Oh, boy. And if there's one guy who should be wearing a shirt, it's this guy. I've never, this might be a harsh indictment of Hollywood's beauty standards, but I've never seen as big a pot belly in a film.
I mean, that was not a pot belly.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
a cauldron belly.
Mm-hmm. But it was barrel chested, and that barrel was bulging. It was botulism
you
barrel.
You could have hollowed out that barrel chest and put it on you because you're poor and you lost everything in the stock market crash.
The casting notes say toad-like. Okay.
Now I feel like we've gone too far.
Yeah, we're looking for a
middle-aged man actor for this role. Description: if the lead boss bad guy from Super Mario 2 was a person,
sort of a King Hippo type.
Okay, we're not going too far.
Okay,
he's had a long acting career.
And like his wife, she says, you know, your son's never going to grow up to be like you, which is like, no shit, he's already fully grown. She's going to leave him and not share the circus earnings of her giant baby man.
So the only place Mickey can find solace is at Alfie's, Paul Sorvino's bar, mm-hmm. where the only other customers seem to be Dominique Swain as
girl who just stands in front of the jukebox
as
all the time.
Hussy number one. She's Michael Madsen's girlfriend, I guess. Michael Madsen, who is playing the part of low-life sleazebag, and Daniel Baldwin, who is playing the most anti-Semitic character I've seen in any movies that's not about World War II or about skinheads. In years.
When you're watching one of these cash grab performances, you're assuming like they're in and out, they're just doing it for the bucks. But it feels like Daniel Baldwin's like, okay, sure, yeah, what do you want me to say?
I'll say that for money.
Call Jewish people, what lampshades? That's insane.
At one point, your first name is, he talks about how, he says, what comes between Monday and Wednesday? Jews Day. That's when they take everything from you. These Jews own it, running the banks, stealing everything from us. And it's like, wow, he throws the K word around a bunch of times.
And
it's like
I don't even remember. Like, I maybe it's just because I don't hang out with like a bunch of anti-Semites in bars, but I don't remember.
You haven't lived, man.
I don't remember like the financial crisis being blamed specifically on like the Jewish people.
I mean, I'm sure anti-Semites did.
Yeah.
There were a lot of Jewish people involved in those companies. I mean, Lehman Brothers is a Jewish name, you know, not brothers.
Yeah, I mean,
everyone can be brothers.
Anti-Semitic people blamed the delay of the video game No Man's Sky on the Jewish people.
All right.
but that was because the Nomanskiewicz family sued them
sure.
for a piece of the action. But it comes out of nowhere, and it's like, wait, I thought this movie was going to be about the financial crisis. I didn't know it was going to be about racism.
Yeah.
And Daniel Baldwin really throws himself into this anti-Semitic part. It's very weird. And
off-putting. He looks enough like Alec Baldwin that if you kind of squint your eyes a little bit, you could imagine Alec Baldwin saying it.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think The Believer had this much open anti-Semitism in it.
I'd also like to point out that Michael Madsen and Daniel Baldwin are wearing the same shirts in two successive scenes that are supposed to take place on different days.
Yeah, but that's why they're super low lives, dude.
Yeah, they only have two shirts. You know why? Because the Jews took the other ones.
Charlie Brown.
Jewish tailors won't charge them too much for shirts.
Yeah.
So also that scene featured Dominique Swain playing the jukebox. We'd seen her earlier in a scene where she had super weird interactions, throwing herself at Jimmy Valenti at one point.
And so Jimmy Valenti is driving down the street. He gets out and he accidentally bumps into Mickey and knocks him down.
Once again, their paths cross.
Yeah, it's like a Dickens novel. And so he helps him up. Hey, man, you okay? You look like you got the weight of the world on your shoulders. All right, we'll be good. Thus establishing he cares about everybody he sees. Mm-hmm. He's just such a sweet man. He's got such an open heart.
That and like in his business meeting, he's like very keen on telling the people like whatever charity we give to, I want to make sure that the money goes to the actual people, not the administrative
80
costs.
80 to 90%. And the guy who's handling the charity just keeps saying, I know that's how you roll, Jimmy. So that's the thing. I took care of it. I know how you roll. So, and it is like a,
he's trying that out.
It's like
he showed up to work and he's like, I'm going to try and be a little hipper and maybe Jimmy will recognize that.
I like this new thing that kids are saying, how you roll. Because it's like, that's, you know what? I like a good roll.
Yeah.
Sometimes, let me just be honest. True confessions here. I'm like, okay, Father, I've sinned. When I go to the restaurant, sometimes what I'm really looking forward to is the roll. Not even the main course or the dessert. It's crazy, I know, but that's just how I roll. I'm going to use it in the meeting tomorrow, okay, honey? And his wife is like, go to bed. It's 3 a.m. Please stop.
Stop talking about rolls. Stop. Every night with the rolls.
This will be the one time in the movie that a woman is justifiably angry at the man. Let me go to bed. Stop talking about rolls. So he's just a sweetheart. He's just a honey pie. And long story short, they meet at their Mickey stays with his brother. And his brother's wife says, I want that loser out of my fucking house. He's a fucking loser. You're a fucking loser. He's a piece of shit.
This isn't a great scene in a bedroom where that's where we're introduced to the idea that this movie's like, these characters are just not going to wear very many clothes.
No,
get used to it,
the
buddy.
The brother, who's an older gentleman, is just sitting there in almost no clothes. And so the next day he says, you got to leave. She doesn't want you here. And Mickey's like, I supported you for 2 years. Now you're throwing me out. And so he's got no choice. The only people who care about him are Michael Madsen
now,
and Daniel Baldwin.
Why was the brother character shirtless in that scene?
This is the morning.
I mean, he couldn't just toss one on. I mean, if you're going to be throwing somebody out, like, you're going to have that kind of hard conversation. You don't want to, like, throw something
out. I don't
know.
Sometimes when I will go over to your house, you're wandering around in your underwear.
Yeah, but I guess that's the same thing.
But
it's a power play.
You want to show off.
You want to be like, Who's the big guy around here?
Well, it's an intimidation technique. Yeah, the way, like Lyndon Johnson would call people into the bathroom with him. You'd think that would put him in the shameful position. No. He's making you feel uncomfortable. So what his brother Joe is saying is, hey, this is me. This is me naked to the world. And you know what? That should make me vulnerable, but it makes you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable with my body, all of it. You're the one who's not comfortable with it. Shame on you. Get out of my house because my wife told me you have to leave.
But his sister-in-law is another person calling Mickey a loser. We also get Mickey's mom calling him a loser.
He goes to a bingo parlor where his mom, Margot Kidder, is playing bingo with Doris Roberts. And he asks for her for help and she refuses. Doris Roberts has a heartbreaking monologue about how her son died of suicide after a heroin addiction.
Which she repeats twice. Once with Margot Kidder out of the room and once with her back in the room.
And so he's got nowhere to turn except these two anti-Semites. He joins their group. He doesn't get his head totally shaved, but he gets
a buzz
cut.
It's really great. It's this great transformative moment where we are greeted to flashbacks to scenes from earlier in the movie.
Just pow, pow, pow.
I
just
forgot
like
about that.
Sidney Lumet, pawnbroker, Devil Knows You're Dead. What was that?
Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Before the Devil Knows You're Dead style, where it's just like pop, pop, shots from the past.
But it's like they're all like these gauzy pick, like it's like a early 90s like R&B music video.
Well, because that's what the music is when it comes in. Then there's some kind of love song, right?
Yeah, I mean, most of the music...
The love song from No Deposit.
The love theme from No Deposit.
It sounds like the kind of love song you would hear in an 80s action movie that's clearly, like, kind of from the 50s or 60s, and you're like, I guess cool people listen to this when they're, like, about to hook up.
But he's getting his head shaved and a tattoo put on his neck.
Yeah, they call a tattoo artist, and for some reason...
Into the bar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's got to be against health code.
I would have to assume so. I mean, there's blood coming out of his body mm-hmm. in a place that people are ingesting drinks. But Paul Sorvino, he already lets people smoke in there. He doesn't care about the rules.
He doesn't care. Well, that's the thing. He's gotta keep his regulars happy.
Yeah. And so they instantly go – he instantly goes from just a normal guy down on his luck to a skinhead who is robbing a bank with Michael Madsen and Daniel Baldwin. Mm-hmm. That bank – full of Jewish people.
Yep, yeah. And
very
it's
Jewish.
Very clearly in the in like the conference center of a large or to mid-size hotel.
Ironically, this movie that was trying to make a stance against anti-Semitism was doing something anti-Semitic itself by taking up a ballroom that should have had a bar mitzvah in it.
Yeah,
some unlucky Toronto Jewish boy had to have his bar mitzvah at the synagogue because mm-hmm. they couldn't rent the event space at the local Hilton Honors Hotel. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I'm very mixed up about what the movie's feelings about the Jewish people are. Like,
because they're only shown in banks?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're supposed to not sympathize with the anti-Semitic talk, but at the same time, it's not really refuted particularly strongly either.
Well, I feel like the movie doesn't really need to refute that.
I guess.
I don't think the movie needs to show a Jewish person being great so that the audience is like, oh, Daniel Baldwin was wrong about
but
that.
Like,
Jews aren't evil.
Our hero doesn't even turn around. He's just like, at the end of the movie, he's just like, I want to go home. I don't, you know, it's wrong
he's
to shoot
a moron.
People. Yeah.
It is wrong. Are you, and you disagree with the message it's wrong to shoot people?
Well, I don't think that it's particularly more wrong to shoot one type of person than another type of person.
All lives matter. Heard it here first.
Oh, wow.
Wow,
Dan.
Wow.
Jesus, dude. Oh, my God. Just rewind the tape.
You know what? Delete it.
Yeah.
You've shown your true colors.
All
right.
So this is where the confluence of events leads us to the ultimate showdown, because Jimmy Valenti has shown up to the bank to pick up his $8 million.
And
or sign
just
for
to
it or
sign
something.
The papers, because apparently that's a thing you have to do now.
Eric Roberts comes out from behind the desk.
Happy
he
as
is
a clam.
Jittery as hell.
And
he is walking like a man with 1.5 legs.
That was that CBS sitcom, right? 1.5 legs.
Yeah.
And but that's when our villains walk in, shoot a security guard in the head instantly.
Immediately.
Yeah,
and
immediately.
Also,
and actually what it looks like a pretty decent use of special effects.
Yeah, that was a pretty good special effect.
And they also wrap a giant length of chain around the doors, which we later see does not prevent people from opening the door.
When the doors open from the outside later, the chain falls off harmlessly.
It sloughs off like a snake skin.
Now, we didn't mention that there's also two policemen who I think are both named Tony, mm-hmm. who are called
introduced
in by...
for no particular reason.
Called in by police chief Peter Coyote, mm-hmm. who tells them in his Ken Burns tones that he knows they've been working really hard. He needs them to work another shift, even though they're owed a day off. They've been working on the Fox case for days, but the media is howling down his throat, and there's so much stuff going on in the city that he needs them to work two more days. This is in his office in the police station that, as Stuart mentioned, also has a business group of some kind sharing the office,
yep.
And there's a poster in the hallway that seems to be like either an ad or an employee of the month or something yeah. like that.
And judging by their accents, these two detectives just recently transferred from Saskatchewan.
Oh, everyone in the movie, except for the name stars, is very much Brooklyn by way of Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And... It's
they're like, what's the matter, eh?
Yeah. I was walking a boot here. Anyway, but that's besides what. So they're on, these guys take hostages at the bank. They especially don't like that the Jewish people are there. But then the anti-Semitic stuff kind of takes a back seat. It doesn't really appear that
well,
much.
Well, first the criminals knock Eric Roberts down and kick him a bunch. And each time they hit him... They use Foley effects of, like, eggs breaking. It's the craziest thing I've seen in a real movie.
It's like he's got empty, like, he took a bunch of eggs and pulled the yolk out without breaking the shell and then stuffed it all in his pants. So that each kick is like, crunch, crunch. And,
I mean, there was still, like, a little Jewish stuff, though, when, like, our hero, or our, The Frank D'Angelo, right? That's his name.
Yeah,
the
hero, Jimmy Vigilante. Yeah.
He gets shot by one of the guys when he's trying to defend a young girl, and
the granddaughter, Mickey, I'm assuming, or possibly daughter. I don't know what kind of logic this movie uses.
Of Robert Loggia.
Of Robert Loggia, who is playing a Holocaust survivor.
But but Mickey's like, what? He's not a Jew. We're like, it's like we're here to shoot Jewish people.
No, that's right. I forgot about that. No, so yeah, there, Robert Loggia, that's right. He goes, I've seen the devil. You're nothing. And he rolls up his sleeve. He's got numbers tattooed on his arm. He's a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if it's better or worse that he does not attempt to do any sort of Eastern European accent.
Mm-hmm.
He's apparently a – maybe he came over as a kid or a teenager, and he worked really hard to get his accent away
because
he was so traumatized by his time in the camps. But this –
I don't know. He seems pretty comfortable with himself and – kind of self-assured. Like, I don't feel like he would try and hide anything.
I guess. Well, I mean, there's no
obfuscation with Robert
Loggia's
performance.
But the confidence may come from the fact that he's like, I recreated myself in my life, and I didn't let that tragedy define me. Because if I've learned anything from meeting Holocaust survivors, it's that, one, the Holocaust was terrible. And two, there's this is going to sound terrible. There's two types. Those who never want to talk about and those who want to talk about nothing else.
Okay.
And there are people who are shattered by it,
mm-hmm.
and then there are survivors who kind of seem to take confidence in a way from it, that like, I survived the worst possible thing that could ever happen to a person, and that didn't destroy me, so I can handle anything. And so like, he's the second type, I guess, and that he's like, you know what, I'm not going to let this bank robbery get to me because I stared down Hitler.
Michael Madsen and one of the Baldwins are not going to put me down.
And they punch him, and he goes, you punch like a girl. And later he gets the best line in the movie. After everything's been taken care of, he goes, Frank D'Angelo gets shot. He recognizes that, hey, this is the guy I picked up off the sidewalk before.
Uh-huh.
And the guy goes, hey, he helped me. I'm going to take him in another room. They have a little heart-to-heart. Frank D'Angelo says, I guess, the moral of the movie.
And that's
it's
the
nice
moment-
to be great, but it's great to be nice.
But that's the moment when the other bank robbers are like, oh, yeah, our possibly susceptible to coercion friend, we were able to turn to our cause in under a day. Yeah, let's let him go in the other room with that incredibly handsome and charismatic wounded man.
I mean, the handsome part.
Super tall and wealthy.
But I also just wonder what they're doing out there. Just like, all right, well, you go in the back for a while. We'll just keep standing here with our guns.
Especially because they don't seem to want money. But then by this point, the police are surrounding the bank.
Yeah.
And
there's
also
a massive crowd forming between the bank and the expansive tree line of downtown Brooklyn.
Downtown Brooklyn really seems to have a lot of wooded highway access.
It was interesting enough that it was in that crowd scene that I finally was like, oh, there's a non-white person in Brooklyn, apparently. Because the first people of color showed up.
And meanwhile, we're getting a lot of news reports from, what was the guy's name?
Frank Ambrosio, I think it was.
Yeah, Frank Ambrosio.
Ambrosio. And his report
it's
on the
Frank
scene.
Frank Ambrosio to his friends.
And his report on the scene, which his name I think was Fred Lepko.
Matthew Lesko.
And this is a movie where we see everything that's happening. We know the backstory of these characters. It cuts to a news break, and we watch for a while, for like 3 minutes, a reporter explain that he doesn't really know what's going on with the situation.
And we don't even see
which
the reporter's face.
Which
we're
is
watching,
realistic, but we don't need to see that in a movie.
We're watching the anchor just listening to it, and it's like, did they want the audience to jump in and fill in the reporter on what's going on? Or
yeah. Meanwhile, all of the people in Mickey's life are watching this tragedy unfold on
his
television.
Wife sees it at the fancy tea room where she's mm-hmm. meeting her friend. His
not
mom,
Mickey's wife.
Not Mickey's wife.
Is at the circus with the giant baby.
Mickey's wife is not interested.
Frank's wife sees it.
Mickey's mom sees it. Mm-hmm. Mickey's brother sees it, which finally gives him the strength to stand up to his wife in the best scene in the movie.
He delivers the best line.
I've said earlier, Robert Loggia, the best line. I was wrong. Joe has the best line. His wife goes, your loser brother's robbing a bank. And she already said, like, gay, go get me some more fucking vodka if you can handle that, you loser. This is how she talks to him all the time. And he goes, what? My brother is in trouble robbing a bank? And Stuart, do you want to deliver his classic line?
I think
line?
Dan wants to deliver it.
Dan, I think.
I don't know if I remember it exactly, but it was something like, I sold out my brother for pussy.
And you're a cunt. You're a cunt. That's quoting what he says.
After he fucking spikes the vodka bottle on the ground, she's like, hey.
Dan, you might want to do an explicit language, a special warning on this.
Yeah.
Because that word, the C word, I don't like to say. But it's
hilarious in this
scene. It escalates the movie suddenly to it goes from like 60 to 100. You're like, wait, what did he just say?
It would be terrible if some plucky listener took an audio clip of Dan saying that.
No.
I don't know, turned it into something like a ringtone.
Yeah. Oh boy.
And and so the next time we see Joe, he's talking to a policeman again in the police station / hotel restaurant, and he's establishing what we already know, that his brother lost everything. He lost his house, and the cop is like, wait, he lost his house? He lost his wife, his baby, his house. So they took his house away. He lost his house. His house. He lost it. They lost his house.
Wait, where he lives with his family?
Yeah. It's like the phrase he lost his house is spoken so many times. But back to the bank robbery. So to make a long story short.
So that conversation they're having in that breakfast nook, in that booth that they're sharing. That's apparently the hot box in the police department. That scene clearly shows this detective sitting down with the brother, and he's like, oh, wow, your brother's a bad guy. And then by the end of it, he's like, he lost his house? No, he's clearly a hero.
Yeah, he turns around. Meanwhile, and I think that same policeman is also supposed to be at the bank at the exact same time.
They're next door to each other.
The bank and the police station makes sense. You want to put the bank somewhere safe.
And the tea room is next door to that.
It's New York's really a small town.
And Alfie's bar is right next to it.
Just because
it's a neighborhood story.
Yeah,
that's true. What neighborhood of Brooklyn was this, by the way?
You're going to say Borough Park, aren't you?
It's Bush doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Dragonwick.
Yeah.
They make a long story short about the heist, because the hostage situation is not actually that interesting. Well, it's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. But shooting happens. Mickey gets shot. Frank has already been shot through the shoulder.
D'Angelo playing Jimmy Villain.
Oh, sorry. Jimmy is right. Yeah. It's so hard to tell him apart.
Yeah.
He's already established his bona fides.
Where one begins and one ends.
His bona fides is a great man, because Mickey says, hey, let him go. You can go. And he goes, I could go, but my balls wouldn't come along for the ride, or something like that. He wouldn't be a man if he walked out of that situation. Yeah. And so at the last moment, even though he's been shot in the shoulder, he uses that hand to pick up a gun and shoot the two robbers after they've already shot Mickey.
Yeah, there's a plainclothes cop there that tries to intercede, and Frank D'Angelo's character pulls him down so that he doesn't get shot, and then kills both bank robbers.
Now, not since The Taking of Pelham 123, my favorite movie, has there been a less effective undercover cop. Who just jumps out, I'm a cop, and then immediately gets either shot or pulled to the ground. Jimmy Valenti / Frank D'Angelo is a saint, is a hero. Robert Loggia delivers what I thought was the first best line until I remember Joe's argument with his wife. The best, second best line in the movie, which is, bring a stretcher for this good man. Get garbage bags for these pieces of shit. And the hospital beds are wheeled out, and then
everyone seems to have forgotten that Mickey was part of the hostage situation by this time, because they're like,
that's how they pitch it, though.
Like, they like say, literally, they're like, these two guys held us hostage. And they like, I'm like, what do you mean, these two guys? There was a third man.
Another favorite of mine. Who knows? Because the more important thing is that these guys, who both have been shot, they both need medical attention. Their stretchers are allowed to sit right outside the entrance of the bank while every character they know rushes through the police line and has a moment with them.
Yeah. They allow Paul Sorvino, his bartender, to come up and have a little bedside moment.
Not his mom, but his mom's friend from the bingo parlor runs up to have a moment with him and tell him she loves him.
Margo Kidder was in some bushes somewhere. She couldn't be bothered.
Oh.
Paul Sorvino sees the news story with those three guys robbing the bank.
He was just kidding, Margo Kidder. So
Paul Sorvino sees this news story of these three guys having robbed the bank, and he goes, you can see that look on his face where he's like, oh shit, they're my only customers.
I better curry favor with the only guy left.
The only survivor.
Otherwise, it's just me and Dominique Swain. Dominique Swain.
Yep, who's playing some weird song in the jukebox and dancing along.
Now, also, this is all while Frank D'Angelo's cover of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah is playing.
Oh, yeah.
And a a parade of Orthodox Jews walk out of the bank, I assume thanking God that a man like Jimmy Valenti was created.
And it's thanks to Watchmen that this is the second worst use of that song in a movie.
And after that, that's pretty much it.
There's no coda or anything. I remember what it was. Jimmy, like, as he's being wheeled out, tells Eric Roberts to pay off, that he's going to pay off Mickey's
mortgage.
House. And it's just like, well, that's a nice gesture, but Mickey's clearly going to jail for a very long time.
I don't know why he suggested that he'll also pay for his legal fees, but that's not going to help the fact that, like, he still doesn't have a job. He still, I mean, is pretty easily convinced into doing bad things. Like, yeah. He has a neck tattoo now. Like, that doesn't go away. That's permanent, dude.
I mean, you can get those removed. I assume Jimmy's going to pay that bill also.
He's going to pay to get his neck tattoo removed?
He's going to adopt him. He's his ward.
At that point, he's just going to be... we already seen that Jimmy has, like, a driver/gopher who's obsessed with keeping Jimmy's car clean. And when he goes up to him, he says, "I apologize, I didn't have a chance to clean the car." I expected him to just pull out his sword and commit seppuku right there in front of him. He is so apologetic because
he is wearing a ponytail, so you assume that he's way into Highlander the movie.
You have to assume, like, Jimmy Valenti is such a living saint. People love him so much that when they fail him even in the slightest, it hurts them more than it hurts
all their
him.
Misdeeds are reflected upon them like the penance stare.
Like Ghost Rider. When he's told that he has to go sign for this loan, and he goes to, or not loan, this payment, and he goes to his office, they go, "Oh yeah, these new rules, payroll should have dealt with it, but they didn't." He goes, "Hey, everyone makes mistakes. Don't yell at payroll about it. Don't make them feel bad. We'll just send out a memo saying these are the rules now. Tell them about my charity." So, like, he's just the sweetest boss in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the moral of the story is that Frank D'Angelo, by extension, must be a great man.
And the moral of the story is you should go out and watch this movie. Mm. Just watch it. If you want to watch this crazy passion project that is a love letter to himself.
And the movie ends with a bunch of slow-mo, black and white sequence shots of all the characters, all the big stars that we've seen in
almost
the movie.
He may have gone out of his way to find the least flattering picture of almost all of them. Eric Roberts's is him, like, crying with blood dripping out of his nose.
Yeah, crawling around on the floor, mourning the loss of his testicles. Whereas the picture of Frank D'Angelo in there is beatific almost.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Peter Paul Rubens painted this shit.
So we should do our final judgments about this movie, whether it's a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie we kind of like.
Is there any doubt?
Stu, I feel like you...
This is a good, great movie. This is a movie where the financier of the movie, the writer, director, star, not only plays this awesome businessman, but he also, I think, gets approached while on a stretcher having been shot by the chief of police, who basically is like, "You want the key to the city, and you can be chief of police if you want, because you're the best shot I've ever seen."
Yeah.
It's great.
And he acts like a gangster, dresses like a gangster. No, turns out he's the best of us.
You start watching this movie, and you're like, okay, this is pretty slow. And, it, you know, it takes a little bit of time before it starts cooking.
Well, that's,
oh, boy.
That's first
sweet
5 minutes of info dump.
That's something that we didn't mention, is that the movie takes a really long time to set up everything before, like, the hostage situation. And then the hostage situation, like, starts and is resolved in, like, half an hour.
Oh, yeah. Boy, when that pot gets boiling, yum, yum, yum.
And this is an 80-minute movie, right?
Yeah.
That's the other thing we should mention. Go watch this movie.
Block out
an hour and a half for it, and then spend the last 10 minutes masturbating in joy that such a thing exists as this weird vanity project.
Yeah, no, I think this is a good, bad movie. The one thing that, like, holds me back a little bit is, like, the weird anti-Semitism of the movie. Like, it feels like an off note in the same way that, like, there are a lot of, I feel like, good, bad, or trashy movies out there that, like, throw in a rape scene and you're like, why is this in here?
This ruined the movie.
But for the most part, it's not enough to, like, be like...
I find it's just another weirdo thread in the crazy quilt that is this film. And it's okay. I'm saying this. I'm Jewish. It's okay for you to watch this movie.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I'm giving you...
He's the gatekeeper here, Dan.
Anyone who's not Jewish, I'm giving you official permission.
Okay.
So, no deposit. You're looking at the DVD again to make sure that was the right name.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to remember because it has nothing to do with
the soundtrack. The name of the soundtrack is a different
name. Look to the Stars
than the
or something?
Look into the stars.
Look into the stars.
Which is a good way to go blind.
Yeah, but it's also like, if you look at the cover of the box, it's just covered in stars.
Mugs, shirts, stickers, patches, tanks, and more are yours for the purchasing at MaxFunStore.com. Hey, you already love the podcasts, so why not take this to the next level and outfit your home and bod with our merch? MaxFunStore.com. Because if you have to wear a shirt, it should be one of ours.
Next up, we do a few...
Have you seen this show before?
Ads.
You think after... okay. You know, I didn't bring it up in August, even though I should have, but August marked the 9-year anniversary of this stupid podcast.
Yikes. I wasn't here for all that time, but I'm still going to take credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
You were there for...
most of it.
Like 8.5 years.
Yeah. Some of it.
That's crazy.
You know, that's a popular anniversary to celebrate 9 years.
Yep. We should get each other anniversary gifts, so that'd be nice. We've been doing this podcast longer than either Stuart or I have been married.
Yeah.
We've been doing this podcast longer than
Dan at this point.
Wait, no, that's not true. It's not actually true.
We will reach that point.
Yeah.
But it's longer than Barack Obama's been president.
That's true. Yeah. It was a different nation when we started this.
People needed to laugh. They needed to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crazy amount of time to be doing this.
What year was that?
2007 was when a little movie called Stealth graced my DVD player in my the bedroom in the apartment I shared with two other people.
And I stuffed a single Rock Band microphone in a homemade shock absorber that I made from putting some rubber bands.
Oh, that's weird, because everyone has commented that those early episodes had amazing sound quality.
They sound great. That's why I revisit them so often.
Yeah. Don't listen to the early episodes, guys.
So many memories. Yeah,
I'm such an asshole.
That's a long time. This is the longest I've done almost anything. Except live.
Okay, now that I've juiced us up, what's the next stage of this game?
Ads. Which
we
is to say
pay the piper
that the Flophouse
9 years don't come cheap.
Yeah. The Flophouse is supported by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a compelling website. From the strange to the downright bizarre, great stories define us. You should tell yours with simple tools and templates. Squarespace helps you capture your story with a captivating website.
Now, Dan, I got a question about Squarespace.
Okay.
I've got an idea for a website. I kind of mentioned it earlier.
I'm surprised.
It's called www.teenagemutantninjaturtlets.org. And it's these new crazy characters. They're the toilets. They're also teenagers who are mutants, and they're ninjas. And I figured, you know what? Don't bother with TV. TV's broken. Thanks to, people are cutting cords left and right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're streaming stuff now.
You shouldn't cut those cords. I mean, like, the cords aren't the problem.
You got to cut the cord.
Yeah, so of course.
Once the baby's born.
Okay.
You can't just leave it attached.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's nuts. You want to wait till the last jolts of blood are pumped through that cord.
Oh, boy.
Because that's the super strength blood. Mm-hmm. Then you cut the shit out of that thing.
Yep. Right. You put on that Freddy glove and you go.
That's how they do.
It's a girl, bitch.
Welcome to the world, bitch. I could say that as my kid. Actually, that makes it even worse.
That's crazier. What's he doing?
I'm just glad that Freddy settled down and started a family.
Who is
Although
he
is a child molester, so that's not great.
A child murderer, right? Don't they?
But that's why they burned his house down,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Maybe he's just a child murderer. You
so
know
what you're
what?
Saying is
I'm
you're...
sorry, Freddy. You're merely a child murderer. I apologize. But it's called... And so anyway, I want to just get on the web and start streaming these original animated web series about these ninja toilets. Can Squarespace help me with that kind of site?
It certainly can. And that's all I have to say about that.
Will it make the site look the same on like a phone or on a desktop
that's
or on a
right.
laptop or on an iPad?
It scales to different devices. It's got what you call responsive design.
That's great.
That's great. And what's the how do they support our show and support Squarespace?
Well, you can start your free trial today by visiting squarespace.com/flop. You should Squarespace.
So you're saying you're going to hide? You're going to have like the bios of these Ninja Turtlets available for anybody. But you're going to hide all the videos, the hot vids, behind a paywall, right?
No.
Because you don't want anybody to just see that shit.
Information wants to be free, and there's no better information than toilets fighting crime.
Okay.
With ninja
weapons.
So
it's based, you're going to make money based on ads.
It's going to be ad-supported, and also internet equals cash dollar signs.
Okay.
I'll figure it out. I'll figure out how to monetize this idea. I mean, the money's just going to come flowing in, but mostly
and you'll take a big bag and write a dollar sign on it to catch all the money.
So I know what's in it, yeah.
Put it right next to your disk drive for when the money squirts out.
The Flophouse is also... Flophouse is also supported in part by Mack Weldon, the clothing company.
Angus Mack Weldon.
Mm-hmm. Mack Weldon, I'll tell you what, it's better than whatever you're wearing right now.
That's wrong, because I'm wearing Mack Weldon right now.
Really?
Yeah. This is to tell the truth. My Mack Weldon underpants, first in the rotation, right off the bat.
Okay.
Every time. I always go through them, and then I go through my lesser Hanes or what have you underpants. Mm-hmm. Now, they're comfortable, they're roomy, they're not
they're
too roomy.
Croomy?
They're croomy, which is a word you just made up that I don't know what it means by itself.
Comfortable and roomy, yeah.
Oh, I see, yeah, that makes sense. They're super croomy, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's when you think Mack Weldon, think croomy.
With the croomy center.
Yeah, that's a croissant.
But they are super comfortable underpants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they make all your business look great.
Yeah, what were you going
to
say, Dan?
Well, Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they will refund you, no question asked. No questions asked, even.
One, multiple questions,
just making it better each time.
You know, as I have gotten older, guys, when I was a young man, I just put whatever I wanted on my undercarriage. Mm-hmm. But as I've gotten older,
sometimes
I've realized,
hot dog buns.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in a pinch. It's what I call it when I pinch my business with a hot dog bun.
I don't really know about that.
But it's a thing. Look it up on the internet. But what I was saying is as I've gotten older, I don't mind spending a little bit extra bucks on the stuff that keeps my business that you can't see on my underpants.
Look, you only get
unless
one.
Unless you're Dan and you come over.
You only get one. Yeah. Take good care of it.
Body?
Penis?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Unless you're that sideshow guy from the 20s who had three legs and two penises.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember his name. He was Italian.
Why do you make a face?
Because I'm trying to remember and I can't remember it.
But Mack Weldon, it's good for working out. It's good for going to work. It's good for going out dates. It's good for everyday life. It's just good, guys. And if you go to MackWeldon.com, you can get 20% off using the promo code FLOP.
Perfect.
Go buy them. You will not be unsatisfied.
Thank you for your support.
And now we got some Jumbotrons.
Jumbotrons.
Dan, punch that up.
Okay.
Okay. So I got the first. No, I think Elliot's going to go first.
Oh, okay. I'll go first. This is a personal message.
Mm-hmm.
This is a message for Melissa Trujillo from Dylan Trujillo, and parentheses, her awesome little brother. It says, happy birthday. I know you'll love the gift of the peaches saying happy birthday,
happy
Melissa.
Happy birthday, Melissa.
Hey.
Happy birthday, Melissa. Will Elliot sing a song? Maybe. Happy birthday to you. I can sing it now because it's in the public domain. Turns out Sony never actually owns the copyright. They just stole money from a lot of people for decades. To you. Will Dan sigh? Will Stu crack a beer?
Oh, shit.
He's just got a bottle of Schweppes over there.
For once, he doesn't have a beer.
You're the best, and you're welcome for showing...
Oh, that didn't work.
And you're welcome for showing you this great podcast. And you're welcome for showing you this great... And well, I don't know. Anyway, so in a way... Oh, no, it should be... So you're welcome... you know what?
Oh, boy, this is falling
apart. Dylan, you got to put some quotes in there, some commas. Now I know how to read it. And you're welcome for showing you this great podcast. So in a way, I am also the best. To the both of us, seriously, I love you, and you're an amazing sister. Ra-row.
Ra-row.
Dylan. So happy birthday, Melissa.
That's so sweet, from a brother to a sister. You don't really see a lot of that kind of sibling commitment. So.
I often forget to tell my sister happy birthday, and we share a birthday.
Yeah,
it is impossible for me to forget it.
So up next on the old Jumbotron, we have what I can only assume is another personal message. This message is for Helen. The message is from Jason, and the message reads as follows. Sup. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That was the message, huh? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Helen, if you're out there, Jason says, sup.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to tell someone sup over the
Jumbotron. Yeah, yeah, jump over to MaxFun.com. And
org. MaximumFun.org.
Don't go to MaxFun.com.
No, no, it's porn. Go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Yeah, it's somewhere in there.
I believe so. I believe so. But now, it's time for letters from listeners. You
letter
write them, we read them.
Time. It's letters letter from time. Listeners. Letter.
Time.
For listeners.
Yeah, it's a great song.
Not really a song.
It was sort of a call and response sort of
it
thing.
It was a thing, yeah. It was a thing. That's the great thing about the word thing, is you can use it to describe stuff that doesn't really have a word.
Yeah, as established earlier.
Like, what are those things at the end of your shoelaces called?
They're who
called,
is that guy covered called, in rocks?
They're called aglets. Yeah. And thing is the guy. Oh, I see what you did. Yeah.
So this first letter is from first name withheld, Robert, last name withheld.
Hmm, it's the middle name.
Who says...
I assume that's James Robert Ryan Tolkien.
Mm-hmm. As with most parents of preteen children... The Flophouse is our standard entertainment to listen to while shuttling the kids to their various basketball and baseball events.
Not this one, I hope.
That's terrible. The 13-year-old will last until the first sustained Elliot pun run, at which time the earphones are put on with an audible sigh.
Kids hate me.
She must be paying closer attention than I thought, as the other day I was watching a movie and she asked me if it was a bad, bad movie, a good, bad movie, or a movie I kind of liked. Stuart, as the resident cinephile... How long until this becomes the new standard rating system for all movies? Dan?
I give it another, what, we've been doing this 9 years?
Nine years.
One more year. 10 years is the rule.
Yeah. We have to.
Yeah, that's what they have to do.
Yeah. Your grandfather in it.
So call up the father of movies.
Yeah. Thomas Edison?
Yes. Call him up. On the Lumiere thing he invented.
Oh, the 10-year grandfather you're talking about, Dan?
Yeah. 10-year grandfather. It's terrible. Dan, my son would like to know when you're going to find the Jersey Devil. Look.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I assume that's a reference to our ghost hunting videos.
Yeah, that's not even a Flophouse thing.
Yeah.
That was a video that we made for my old live show, The Primetime Kalen.
If you look up ghost hunters, Dan McCoy, Elliot Kalen... You might come up with a few amusing YouTube videos.
Very amateurish YouTube videos.
Very slapdash videos that were put together for a live show. And so we were like, let's not put a lot of work into them. Because they're going to be shown once and then that's it. But the search continues. Elliot, as the resident comic book expert, what is your opinion on including real characters or other out-of-context references in your stories? Is there a difference between an Easter egg and a reference slash cameo that breaks you out of the comic slash movie slash TV show's world?
Yeah, there is. But it's one of those things like obscenity. I know it when I see it. Mm. It's hard for me to define. It's like there are times when things can get a little too winky. And then it's like, all right, like I can't buy into the reality of this anymore. Stan Lee's cameos in his movies kind of become that as they get more... Baroque, you know? Or if you're reading a comic book and there's clearly a scene where the creators of the comic are like having a conversation, that can be fun for a panel. But if it's a whole page, forget about it. But you're talking to somebody who wrote a series of one-page bits where it's just starring Wyatt Cenac and me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Co-wrote with Wyatt. Which have been republished in a book that's coming out from Marvel called Secret Wars 2. Which
oh,
is
great.
Where they reprinted a bunch of their humor books, and all my humor stuff is in there.
Yeah.
I didn't know it existed until they sent me one in the mail.
I prefer it when, like, Dave Sim shows up in a Cerebus book, and he teaches us some real-life lessons, like, the broads, am I right?
This movie that we watched today had a real Dave Sim take on women.
Yeah. And last question from this email. House Cat, why did you not have a character in the Adventure Zone crossover? Was it a dispute about money, or are you just too serious for D&D?
I'll have to ask him sometime. He doesn't have a lot of time for Dean. I wouldn't say it's too serious. He just doesn't really truck with that nerd shit. You know what I mean?
He's a little too cool.
Yeah.
You know how some people are so cool that they can do nerdy stuff and still be cool? He's even cooler than that.
He's the next step.
Yeah.
It cycles back on itself.
He's busy skateboarding, having one of the Frank D'Angelo energy drinks.
That's what he drinks now. Yeah.
Hey, do you guys ever fantasize about if
probably
some kid is in like a Home Alone situation and he's got to scare off burglars, that he's going to use audio files of your podcast clips to scare the burglars away?
Not really.
Okay.
Like the your filthy animal bit?
Yeah. Home Alone? Yeah, my classic Stuart Wellington filthy animal bit from the Flophouse podcast.
No, I've never thought about that. So this is from Michael, last name withheld, who writes, "Recently I was stricken with a nasty stomach bug. To distract me from my nausea and to help cover up the sounds that come along with a nasty stomach bug, I downloaded a bunch of Flophouse episodes to comfort me as I pressed my face to the cold tile floor of the bathroom. For once in Earth's history, Elliot's singing actually soothed somebody.
Oh, come on.
Although Stuart's talk of wormy boners did not help my queasiness. And with every mournful sigh from Dan, I thought, what the fuck are you so sad about? I'm dying here, you bastard. Sorry, Dan. It was the virus talking. After a rough couple of days, I realized I was going to live and indeed managed to stand on the bathroom scale to assess the damage. I looked down to find that in 2 days, I had managed to lose 7 pounds.
What?
Oh, he strikes again.
That's right. It was clear this was no random illness. No, I'd been poisoned by that dastardly supervillain. Had he been my Uber driver the night before? Had he slipped some concoction into my food, posing as a line cook? And why had he picked me? Actually, I'm pretty fucking awesome, so that part was understandable. Yeah. Just be careful out there, fellas. 7 pounds is back in town. Also, what movies do you like to watch when you're sick?
My go-to has been, like, lately, it's been The World's End.
Okay.
It's one of those things I can just put on and, like, I go to my happy place. And sometimes lately I'll also throw in The Guest.
Oh.
The Guest is a good one. Yeah, I would put that on my list. I mean, and likewise, any 80s John Carpenter, which is basically the same thing as The Guest.
Yep.
I would watch when I'm sick.
I don't get sick very much. My body just kind of rejects illness.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time I had a kidney stone was pretty bad. And I remember watching From Beyond for the first time. And I was like, around the point that that Jeffrey Combs, as he's mutating because he's seen another dimension, sucks the eyeball out of another man's head, I was like, this movie gets where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
And it really helped.
I suffered a pretty bad arm injury. I broke my humerus after having recently broken my radius. And let me tell
you're still pretty funny.
It was not humorous. You beat me to the fucking joke, you asshole.
Hello, Dan. High five awaiting you. Yeah,
so,
you earned that.
I was stuck on the couch for a while, and of course, my mom went out and rented me some tapes from the local Bee Buster.
Bee Buster?
And she fucking...
Belly Buster.
She knows me because the top of that stack of tapes was Jeff Fahey's vehicle body parts.
Nice.
But a guy who gets in a horrible car accident, which is how I'd broken my arm, and gets a grafted arm of a serial killer on his body. And guess what? That arm wants to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Muscle memory.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm good at one thing. Why won't they let me do it anymore? Murdering. So this is from Joe, last name withheld, who writes, "The Flophouse is my favorite podcast. Dan and Elliot, I love you guys too, but this question is for my favorite flopper, Stu."
Well, thanks for listening.
Okay, thanks, Joe Montana, 49ers former quarterback.
Stu,
mm-hmm.
I recently bought Netrunner on your recommendation from the We Are Your Friends app.
Okay.
However, neither of my roommates, my usual strategy game crew, will play with me.
Weird.
I was thinking of bringing it to my local board game night, but I don't want to be that guy that rolls into a game night, convinces someone to play with him, and then takes 20 minutes to figure out how ice works.
Yep.
How would you suggest I find someone who I can start playing my new game with? Thanks, Joe, last name withheld.
Tinder, probably, right?
Yeah, I think that's the best way if you're like, hey, you want to crank some fucking ice?
on a run
I would say... When I don't know exactly where you live, but I know in New York that if you go look for meetups for board games, and you can look for meetups for the card game in question. You can also go on BoardGameGeek.com and look at the forums. Or go on, in this case, the producer of that game's community section and find meetups for that game that way. That's what I would suggest.
Mm-hmm.
Or come down to Hinterland's Bar. The bar I just opened. And I'll play you, dude.
In Brooklyn, New York. He will. Set it up on the bar.
Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about ice.
Yeah.
Both the beverage and the thing in the game.
Beverage?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like an icy.
I mean, like, you'd put ice in your drink, but I don't...
It's. I mean, I guess slurp down. I get the health department calls it a food at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems weird, too, but it makes more sense to me.
Yeah, yeah, that's why a bar counts as a restaurant for the health department.
Just for the ice?
Ice counts as food, yeah.
Hmm.
Go on, Dan.
That's a little insight into New York health department regulations.
Also, take care of your regulars. Be a Paul Sorvino.
Mm-hmm. Give them a free drink when they lose their house.
Yep.
Because you never know. They might go into a bank and start shooting people up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's the 7 pounds in this scenario.
This last one.
Last letter.
I assume letter. Is mostly for Elliot.
You never know. Dear Elliot. Oh, then probably.
Oh, it starts out with the word Elliot, so...
So yeah. When you read things, you usually start in the middle and then just kind of like expand outward in concentric rings until you reach the beginning?
I saw the word... Well, because it was a hyperlink when I printed it out, I saw President Lincoln underlined. Mm-hmm. So
your eyes went to it. Because I find that's actually how I read menus a lot of the time, mm-hmm. and I have to force myself to go...
Oh, you like zoom in on a specific, like if a word catches your eye, yeah. you're like, I don't know, like
pork belly.
I mean, the word is almost always pork, steak, or chicken. Like it's, mm-hmm. and then
you're like, honey, they have chicken. Give me a second. I'm reading.
And then I put my bookmark in the part of the menu I left off at, mm-hmm. take a nap, use the bathroom, come back. But I find I have to force myself to start at the beginning of the menu, the appetizers usually.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a twist ending. Dessert.
Oh, wow.
It turns out the chocolate fondue did it. Spoiler alert.
What's that cake doing upside down?
We'll find out when we get there, honey.
The molten chocolate cake burned him to death with its lava.
Yep.
Dan McCoy, dessert detective.
Elliot. Have you ever been to President Lincoln's cottage at the Soldiers' Home in D.C.? It's one of the most fascinating and underrated tourist attractions in D.C., far more interesting than Ford's Theater, a weird tourist scam hub. It's a modest house in Petworth, where Lincoln lived for much of his presidency.
I'm familiar with the Soldiers' Home.
Commuting by horse to the White House. He wrote the Emancipation Proclamation there, and the tour gives a great overview of his personality and the personality of D.C. as a city. I bet the tour would give you even greater context for understanding the day-to-day life of Lincoln and the great pressures he faced. I'd also like to recommend this tour to anyone else listening. It's great, and I always encourage tourists to get off the mall and see D.C. as the great city as it is.
CDC, the Center for Disease Control?
Yeah, that last name of
I've actually never
encouraged
been...
Encouraged is when you force people to watch the Entourage movie.
Well, you don't force them. You just push it on them a little bit.
Yeah, you invite them over for a party, and then you just put it on the DVD player, and you're like, hey, just do what your body wants, guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turn it off, because that's what their body wants. Mm-hmm.
Their body rejects it.
I've actually never been to the Soldiers' Home, and I've really wanted to go, and I haven't had a trip to D.C. in years when I've been able to...
I mean,
we went to
D.C. for a live show.
For a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Elliot was like, take me to Soldier's Home. Take me to Soldier's Home. And we're like, no, we don't have time, Elliot.
Maybe tomorrow, Elliot.
I would like
to eat all your green beans.
We rubbed a little whiskey on his gums and put him to bed.
Yeah, because I was fussy. I was just reading a book recently about Lincoln's relationship with John Hay, and one of his private secretaries, later became Teddy Roosevelt's Secretary of State, among other posts that he held. And it talked about these horse rides that they would do, the two of them, between the White House and the Soldiers' Home. And I was getting so envious for all this concentrated time that he got to spend with Abraham Lincoln just kind of like hanging out. And I would like to go see it, actually, for that reason. It was, at the time it was built, it was way off in the woods. And now it's just in D.C. because mm-hmm. the city has expanded. But I'd like to go.
Maybe you could convince Daniel Day-Lewis to go with you, and he would put on his Lincoln performance.
Yeah, that seems... there's only a few steps that I'll have to go through to get to that point. Step one, find out how to contact Daniel Day-Lewis.
I mean, if he's not available, just get Daniel Knight-Lewis.
Oh, boy.
Thanks, guys. I've been great tonight.
Is that M. Night Shyamalan's middle name, brother?
M. Day Shyamalan.
M. Day Shyamalan has no twist endings in his films. You see what you get, says M. Day Shyamalan.
Hey, now's the time for the last segment on the show.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know if I have the energy. Yeah, sure I do.
Which is when we recommend movies that we actually liked, although we enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
No reservations. So like notably,
yeah, Parts called? Unknown was.
Yeah, this is a movie that you'd watch as like a double feature with No Deposit.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys want to recommend? I have my recommendation.
Okay, so I'll go first.
That'd
I guess.
Be no pressure, but I've got one.
I'm going to recommend a movie that probably doesn't need me to champion for it. This is a movie that was, I guess, a big release when I was a kid, and I saw it in the theater. It stars Elliot's pal, Sly Stallone. Mm-hmm. It's a movie called Demolition Man. So if you're looking for a big...
Dan had a look at his face like, you bastard. Are you going to recommend Demolition Man? No.
Why today, of all days, why in 2016...
Dan stares into my eyes and hoping to find some kind of understanding there, but he sees nothing.
Not but emptiness.
Grizzly stew. Yeah.
Demolition Man is a movie where the greatest
please tell us what it is.
This little known indie hit. Indie film. Was it even a hit when it came out? I thought it was,
I don't know.
It was a minor success, I believe.
So,
the miners liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Played real well in Harlan County, Kentucky.
Well, they didn't really have much else to watch down in the mines.
Just projected on the bare rock.
The strong Whose Side Are You On platform that Sylvester Stallone stands for. okay, so Demolition Man is about the greatest cop of the universe fighting an evil drug dealer, and they both... end up getting charged with a crime and frozen, and then they wake up far in the future, and they get into all kinds of wacky adventures. And the villain in this case is played by Wesley Snipes, and this is genuinely a great, over-the-top, cartoony performance that would have not been out of place in any of the Tim Burton Batman movies. It's great. It's almost worth watching just on that energy alone, and it's the sort of performance where you're like, kind of surprised that Wesley Snipes isn't a bigger star because he is so much fun to watch in this movie.
I mean, he has been a huge star. He's gone through his
ups and
downs. I mean,
he's fallen on hard times, I suppose.
I mean, not paying your taxes for many years and then having to pay them all at once will do that to you.
Yeah, I suppose. So if you get a chance, if you haven't already seen it, you should go check it out. It's a great example of a good, bad movie. And you can finally find out what the three seashells in the bathroom are all about.
You don't know how to use those? Ha 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 ha. It also has perhaps the most gratuitous piece of nudity in any film ever.
Yeah.
Where Sylvester Stallone just gets a wrong video phone call from a nude lady, and that's mm-hmm. the entirety of it. She goes, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were someone else.
And now that we have video phone calls, you know that shit happens all the time.
Constantly. Mm-hmm. People are constantly misdialing their video phone numbers.
Okay, so Dan, now that you can't recommend Demolition Man,
damn you! I'm gonna take a page from Elliot's playbook. I'm gonna recommend a movie from 1935.
Just don't take a page from my Playboy.
What if it's one of those like terrible joke pages?
You can take those. Those are pretty bad. Or if it's an article about travel.
Yeah, or some Norman Mailer. Article.
Or Norman Mailer. I'm not familiar with his work either, but...
He's French.
Norman Mailer plus manure.
So, 1935, the version of A Midsummer Night's Dream that was done, and it had Olivia de Havilland as Titania, it had Jimmy Cagney as Bottom, it had Dick Powell as Lysander, I believe.
I think so. And Joey Brown is another
Joey
one of
Brown
the
is snug the
mechanicals.
Joiner.
It was the film version of the Max Reinhardt production.
I believe that's correct. And it's to my taste, I know Elliot and I talked about this and we had minor disagreement. To my taste, there's a little too much gauzy photography of fairies running around.
Which I think is the biggest strong point of the movie. That's a movie I really like a lot. And the thing I like the most about it is the, like, 30s gauzy photographed choreography where there's just, like, nymphs running around a forest with, like, a lot of glitter everywhere.
It happens a lot.
I like that. I like that aspect of it.
If you like that, then you'll love the 35 Midsummer Night's Dream.
But like James Cagney's really good in it. Joey Brown is really funny.
The Rude Mechanicals stuff is very funny. I think it's probably the strongest stuff in the movie. It's an interesting movie to watch. I'm a big fan of the play. It's an interesting movie to watch to see how much they cut down the play. Like, even though the movie's like over 2 hours long, it's like 2:15 or something.
Gotta
like that.
Gotta make room for all those fairies running around.
Yeah, there's whole like wide swaths of dialogue that's just replaced by like people making various faces at each other.
The only thing I really don't like in that movie is Mickey Rooney's performance.
Mickey
as
Rooney is
Puck.
Terrible.
He's
as
just
Puck.
Very irritating.
He's
in it.
So irritating. I mean, Mickey Rooney can go broad, you know, a lot of the time, but this is him as a child, and he like has this like weird like I'm an old man but a child quality about him, and he does this laugh like every other line that just like goes like
this, like this horrible braying thing. Yeah,
and
I think that's a good movie.
Yeah,
I think that's still the best film version of that play that I've seen.
I think that that's probably true, but that also is,
it's damning with very faint praise.
Yeah, but
I have seen better stage productions of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you have.
Yeah.
But if you're a
two
fan,
come to mind.
If you're a fan of
one in Stratford itself.
Oh wow!
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You're big, treading big the shot. Boards.
I guess.
If you're a fan of Midsummer's at all, you should watch the movie. That's what I.
And then just go watch a Midsummer Night Sex Comedy, a really good movie with a terrible title.
Sure.
And I'm going to recommend a movie. I'm going to take a page from the Elliot Kalin playbook and recommend an old movie that's also a foreign film. And I'm going to recommend, you know what? Frank D'Angelo just wanted to make movies, and it's not like he had training in it at all. He just decided he had a story to tell, and he decided to tell it. And this movie was made in similar fashion by a little man named Satyajit Ray from India. And this is his first film, Pather Panchali, which I've been putting off watching for years because even though I love old movies and I love old foreign movies and I love foreign movies, I still every now and then get that feeling of like, this is going to be not as enjoyable as it is, like, good for me. But Pather Panchali is like a genuinely like beautiful, entertaining movie, and it's really heartbreaking and really good. It's from the 50s, and it's a film about rural Indian poverty, but about one family, a husband and wife. The husband has dreams of being a writer, but he's just kind of not supporting his family. The wife is the one the pressure falls on, and they have two kids, an older daughter and a younger son. And there's a certain amount of slice of life-ness to it, but there's a lot of tight plotting in it also. And I like don't want to like talk. It's like to describe the plot is not to describe what's interesting about it, but it's like a beautiful looking film, and the emotions in it are really strong, and the performances are really great. And it's one of those movies where you're like, this was the director's first movie. A number of the actors in it were not professional actors at the time. Like, that's crazy. This is such a good movie. So I highly recommend it. Pather Panchali.
Yeah.
Okay. Three equally good movies.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
One was is one of the hallmarks of Indian cinema. And then you've got kind of Golden Age Hollywood adapting the greatest writer who ever existed. And then you got Demolition Man, the first of
rated R.
I assume would be a Sylvester Stallone Rob Schneider double feature with Judge Dredd.
Yeah. Also a futuristic adventure.
If only Dennis Leary had also been in Judge Dredd.
Mm-hmm. The Three Musketeers, they called them.
Yep.
Because they loved the candy bar of the same name.
Well,
hey,
guys.
Rob, hand me another candy bar.
So,
Megan is the most good deer. Hey,
whoa.
Guys. I heard you were talking about Demolition Man, so I had to stop by. But the episode's running a little long, so I just realized I started a bit. That's not a good idea, so I think I'm probably going to get going.
Goodbye. Right. Questions about your character, John Spartan.
Don't really remember it too much. What was the name of Wesley Snipes' character? Like
Simon
Jimmy Phoenix?
Phoenix.
I knew it was Phoenix or something. Anyway, go see whatever movie I have in theaters right now. Is there something out? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Well, get Creed on DVD.
Oh, sure.
people loved it. And yeah, I'm sure I'll be back at some point. You know,
all right. Well, yeah, it's always good to see you. So door's always open.
What's with you guys? What, Stuart? You just opened your new bar? Or,
yeah, it's been really successful. We carry Bullet Bourbon.
Oh, like my movie Bullet to the Head. Yeah, and Dan, you've got a lot of good things going on.
No, that's not true at all.
Okay, gotta go. Well, you know, even old Sly knows when he's put his foot in the old mouth. So I'm just gonna go. Okay.
Yeah. He always has his jetpack with him.
I hope Elliot comes back soon. He's going to be so mad he missed Sly again.
I'm back, guys. I didn't miss anything, right? I just went to get some more Cheetos.
You didn't miss anything
we'll tell
at
you after
all.
That.
So I just want to thank everybody who came out to the Max Fun meetup. There was a lot of folks that I hadn't met before, and that was really great to meet so many nice, cool folks who came out to the meetup, a week ago at the bar I just opened. It was really humbling to just meet all these really nice people and get that kind of support. And Dan had a great time too.
Yeah, I was also there.
I missed it, but I regretted missing it.
Hopefully we'll get to do more of those things. It's super fun. And if you didn't Maximum come out fun. Because you were worried that you wouldn't know anybody, you should come out and come and talk to me, because at a lot of those things, I mainly spend the time standing around wondering who I can talk to.
Feel free to just walk up to Stuart and tell him you don't listen to the Flophouse.
Yeah, please do that.
People feel fine doing that, apparently.
In between meetups, you can also check out the Flophouse on YouTube. Just check out Flophouse Podcast. There's a lot of really great stuff. Specifically, there's some really great stuff that's made for that podcast. For that YouTube channel by Tony Oker, which are great.
Animated adaptations.
Including a recent one featuring...
Featuring a guy named Sylvester Stallone, right? Yeah. Oh, man, I hope I'm here the next time he stops by. I always miss him.
Dan and I look at each other awkwardly, mm-hmm. and then and if you're looking for any Christmas presents or whatever, man, just because presents, don't forget that we got merch available at the Max Fun store, including a really awesome poster by the artist Tom Fowler, where all of our proceeds for it go directly to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, a great cause. Okay.
Thanks, Stu, for that housework.
This episode was so packed full of experiences. We watched a really crazy, funny movie. Mm-hmm. We celebrated 9 years together.
We talked about the Holocaust and Robert
Loggia.
We talked
about the Holocaust a fair amount and recommended some movies, had some laughs, said hello to some people, said sup to one person in particular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Helen.
Sup, Helen.
The taking of Helen, 1, 2, 3.
Well, I hope that Helen has a good time. I hope that you've all had a good time. But
are we dying?
Gotta come to an end. Yeah. And we're dying. So as we put ourselves
into an eternal sleep,
we sign off saying, I've been Dan McCoy.
And this guy's been Stuart Wellington.
And over here, still tiny, Elliot Kalin.
Good night, everyone.
Smallvember!
Hey. Smallvember!
So this is just like Godzilla. It's a real New York movie.
Yeah. Hell yeah. How are my levels?
Leveling okay.
up. How are my levels?
This is how I'm gonna talk the whole time.
Like that?
Just like this. I'm gonna talk like this. Sort and now this. Song. I'm gonna talk like this sometimes too.
I will talk like this, like a robot, the whole episode. It won't get annoying, I promise.
All right.
Yeah, I guess you got to do the hand motions.
I'm doing them, even though they cannot hear for realism.
Yeah.
You can hear the confidence of the hand motions in the voice.
Yep.
It helps my performance posture.
That's that was the directing you gave during MST3K, right?
I said, hey, move like a robot while you're saying those things.
Move like a robot.
Move like a robot.
Let's what to the tune of Smooth Operator.
Like a robot. Mm-hmm. Boom Operator. Boom Operator. That's the farthest I've ever gotten with that parody. I've been thinking about it for a while.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.